Welcome to KDNK's weekly newsreel,
a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by RJ Paddywax Pet Outfitters, next to City Market in Elgibel, open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywax.com.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host.
The Roaring Fork School District opens the school year with distance learning for at least the first month. The district announced Friday that the new learning model includes more synchronous classes on Google Meet, more accountability for student learning, and more home internet access options. Teachers return to work the week of August 10th. Details are at the Roaring Fork School's website.
The Colorado Mined Land Reclamation Board last week upheld a cessation order that bars further road building and other service-disturbing activities near the West Elk Mine, reports the Denver Post. The mine is owned by Mountain Coal, a subsidiary of Arch Resources. It lies underneath the Sunset Roadless area of the Gunnison National Forest in the upper North Fork Valley.
Colorado will declare racism a public health crisis, reports the Denver Post. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said that this will become formal policy within the agency. Director Jill Hunsaker Ryan said that the goals of the decision are to increase diversity in the workforce and make it easier for local community groups to partner with state health. The agency plans to hire an equity and inclusion officer this summer.
Aspen Vale, Steamboat Springs, and other resort communities across Colorado report that urbanites are buying homes and enrolling their children in schools. The Colorado Sun reports that in Aspen, during the first 2 weeks of July, 111 homes went under contract. The Aspen School District is expecting 150 new students this fall. Vail Mountain School has the longest wait list in the nearly 60-year history of the private school.
Two suspects in an auto theft incident in Garfield and Eagle counties were arrested near the Ruleson exit on I-70 on Monday. A Garfield County sheriff press release states that the arrest came after police pursuit of a vehicle that had been stolen from Parachute. During the chase, the vehicle crossed through a fence from the south side of the highway to the north. After the suspects abandoned the vehicle, police chased them through rough terrain north of the interstate. The men surrendered after being surrounded by law enforcement. Items recovered Monday had been stolen from a cabin near Sweetwater last week when the suspects led police on a similar chase in Eagle County with a different stolen car. An investigation is underway.
Mesa County Valley School District 51 plans to reopen schools August 17th with in-person learning district-wide. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that there will be conditions, including mask requirements for grades 6 through 12, except for exercise or outdoor activities. Students will form cohort groups and undergo screening every morning. Those unwilling to return to school in person can attend the Grand River Academy online-only alternative.
Household recycling returns to Glenwood Springs this fall. The Post-Independent reports that the site at 13th and Pickin will have bins for glass, aluminum, plastic, paper, clothes, batteries, electronics, and composting. City officials hope to open the center in October.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment Tuesday signed on to an investigation into the circumstances surrounding the death of 23-year-old Elijah McLean in Aurora last August. The Aurora Sentinel reports that health department officials have received new information about ketamine, a sedative that paramedics injected into McLean after he was stopped by police. McLean suffered a heart attack shortly after he was given a 500 milligram dose of the drug. Officials claim McLean showed extraordinary strength and at one point tried to grab a police officer's holstered gun.
U.S. Representative Ken Buck, a Republican from Windsor, Colorado, recently introduced legislation that requires CEOs of American corporations to ensure there is no use of slave labor in their supply chains. Colorado Politics reports that Senator Josh Hawley, a Republican from Missouri, is sponsoring a companion bill in the Senate. Buck's Slave-Free Business Certification Act would apply to businesses with sales in excess of $500 million.
Strange seed packages have been popping up, so to speak, in mailboxes around the country, and Garfield County is no exception. County Vegetation Manager Steve Anthony told KDNK that so far, two county residents have received seeds in the mail, including a man in Carbondale whom Anthony visited this week. He said the package came in a 4-inch by 4-inch manila bubble envelope and contained several items.
One was a small Ziploc package of seeds that were labeled carrot seeds, and they do indeed look like carrot seeds. And then there was a looked like a small set of rubber patches like you would maybe use as a patch kit if you had rubber waders or something like that. And then there was a little note that did have the Amazon kind of logo on it. It said happy on one side or not happy on the other side, and looked like it was asking for comments.
The other package came from Silt Mesa and had only a small glassine bag of unknown seeds with a barcoded label from China.
Now, this resident had actually received these seeds about 2 months ago, and she had hung on to these seeds. And after all of this started breaking on state and national media, a family member said, "Hey, Mom, you should turn those seeds in."
The woman had apparently ordered cucumber seeds from Amazon.com, but Anthony said the seeds she received were not cucumbers and they had not come from Amazon. He said one concern is if people who receive these mystery seeds start planting them.
Because we don't want to be planting the next tamarisk or Russian knapweed.
Tamarisk and Russian knapweed are considered invasive species in Colorado. Both spread fast and are difficult to eradicate. The mystery seeds might also bring disease to local plants or harm livestock. Anthony said that people who receive mystery seeds in the mail need to contact the State Department of Agriculture, or CDA, which wants to test the seeds.
So what they are asking is that the recipients do not turn them in locally, but that they contact the Colorado Department of Agriculture's Plant Industry Program.
That would be Laura Potorf, the Plant Health and Certification Section Chief in the CDA's Plant Industry Division.
We certify commodities that are exported from Colorado for pathogen and insect freedom, potatoes and millet and wheat, corn, you know, everything that is moving from Colorado to other countries, we certify that. And we do organic certification. We do hemp, industrial hemp. So we do the gamut.
The division also checks imported nursery stock for Japanese beetles, another invasive species. If a plant is infested, it's quarantined. Potorf says there are state and federal laws in place that regulate imported seeds.
So all seed that comes into the state or that's distributed within the state all has to have a label, and the label tells you what it is, who put that seed in the bag, and then the quality of the seed in the bag, the germination percentage, and if there's anything extra in the bag. There might be some inert ingredients. There might be a few weed seeds, and so they're supposed to tell you what's in that bag.
But whoever is sending the mystery seeds has found a loophole, which means the seeds are entering the U.S. and the state illegally.
What we have seen is just a very high number of unsolicited seeds is coming in. It does appear to be coming from China, and it does not appear to be labeled properly. So instead of the package being marked as seed, which would flag it, you know, when it's coming through customs and border protection, it's coming in marked as jewelry or, you know, wire connectors or something that's not flagging it as seed.
She adds that the amount of unsolicited seeds is increasing.
People are reporting getting multiple packages of unsolicited seed, and the number of people reporting receiving unsolicited seed is extremely large, and we've not dealt with that before.
The CDA wants to test the seeds, but Pothorf says that could take weeks. First, those who receive seeds in the mail need to report them to the CDA via a hotline. Then the CDA will contact the recipient with a way to send the seed to the USDA office in Aurora.
And then USDA in Aurora will send the seed on to their headquarters in Maryland. And in Maryland, they will be identifying the seed, and then they will take a random sample of those seeds and test those for pathogens and any potential, what we call, phytosanitary risk.
Seeds can be identified with or without germination. Steve Anthony says it's imperative that these seeds not be planted or thrown away.
If they didn't order them and they're not what they ordered, or there's no return address or a vague return address, don't plant them. And secondly, do not dispose of them so that they end up in a landfill.
The State Department of Agriculture hotline number is 303-869-9081.
The town of Carbondale is growing, as evidenced by an influx of new construction projects. Most recently, Carbondale Center Place is undergoing a rezoning process for 76 new dwelling units in the Soper Shopping Center along Highway 133. In 2019, the town issued a building permit for 1201 Main Street, also along Highway 133, on the northeast corner of the roundabout. This will include 27 new rentals. In 2018, the town of Carbondale approved the Main Street Marketplace project, adding 115 new residential units adjacent to the new city market. In addition, 30 affordable units are being built along Dolores Way near the Rafta Park and Ride, and 78 dwelling units go with the new Soperus Lodge Assisted Living Facility, nearing completion along the Rio Grande Trail. With the addition of Carbondale Center Place, the town will have approved more than 400 new dwelling units since 2016. According to the town's planning director, Janet Buck, how many of these units are considered affordable is not so cut and dried. The town of Carbondale requires that any new residential development with 5 or more dwelling units set aside 20% of those as deed-restricted, aka affordable housing. Calculations for affordable housing are based on the current median income determined by Garfield County for the town of Carbondale area of $84,500 per person for an individual, adding $7,500 for each additional person in a household. The town's Unified Development Code specifies that the first of these units must be affordable to purchasers earning 100% that current median income. The second should be affordable to those earning 80%, the third 120%, the fourth 150%. A fifth unit would reinitiate the cycle, priced at 100% the median income. The sixth would be 80% again, the seventh 120%, the eighth 150%, and so on. For example, the Main Street Marketplace development next to the new city market includes 115 units. So 23 must be deed restricted. 6 will be affordable to those earning less than that current median income for the town of Carbondale. The other 17 will be priced for individuals earning $84,500 or more per household. Not all of these new developments fall under Carbondale's requirement for affordable housing. Red Hill Lofts along Dolores Way is devoted exclusively to affordability with 30 units for people at 50% to 80% the local average median income. Roaring Fork Schools has its own rules for their employee housing on 3rd Street, and Soperus Assisted Living Facility is also unique with a mix of independent living, assisted living, and memory care units. For KDNK News, I'm Raleigh Burley.
You're listening to the Weekly Newsreel, a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential.
The state's top epidemiologist says the spread of COVID-19 in Colorado appears to be stabilizing. KBUT's Christopher Biddle reports.
Rachel Herlihy of the Colorado Department of Health and Environment told reporters they're seeing hospitalizations, positivity rates, and case counts plateau. She attributes increased social distancing and public health orders like the statewide mask requirement. Herlihy said the trend was reassuring, but also expressed the need for cautious optimism.
One of the things that we know when we enter a plateau phase is that we can really end up going in either direction from this point. There's the potential with just a small increase in the amount of transmission that occurs that we could once again see a rapid increase in the number of cases.
Colorado has counted more than 46,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, with more than 1,800 deaths attributed to the disease. Hospitalizations and case rates fell from their peak in April to a low sometime around late June or early July when they started to go back up. As of Thursday afternoon, the state was reporting 239 hospitalizations due to COVID-19. For KBUT Community Radio News, I'm Christopher Biddle.
A Denver District Court judge recently granted 7 conservation groups across Colorado intervener status in 2 lawsuits, one filed by Garfield County, that challenged new statewide air quality protections. The conservation groups were granted intervener status on behalf of the State Air Quality Control Commission. Western Colorado Alliance, based in Grand Junction, was one of the groups.
This lawsuit, basically it's 2 versions of the same lawsuit that are being brought by Weld County and then a coalition of other counties being led by Garfield County.
Emily Hornback is director of the Alliance.
And the suit is against the Air Quality Control Commission for rules that were passed last December in 2019 to ask for more leak detection and repair on oil and gas facilities across the state of Colorado, especially for facilities that are built within 1,000 feet of homes and playgrounds.
Western Colorado Alliance helped develop what's called the proximity rule at the heart of the legal dispute. Hornback says by contesting the rule, Garfield County commissioners are not representing the interests of all its residents.
So Garfield County is taking up a suit against the Air Quality Control Commission, trying to roll back rules that would protect our air quality and the health and safety of our homes and our playgrounds.
Garfield County commissioners recently gave another $500,000 to pay for the lawsuit and other efforts to resist the state-mandated rulemakings. The commissioners say the money comes from the county's oil and gas mitigation fund and has paid Adamantine Energy, a consulting group, and a Denver law firm $1.5 million to date. Hornback says that Garfield County fought against the group's ability to intervene in the lawsuit.
But thankfully, the district court judge saw through that and realized that, I'm quoting from it, the interests of the public and private entities would be better represented by our organization.
County Oil and Gas Liaison Kirby Wynn told the Post-Independent Tuesday that allowing the intervention could result in special interests determining policy that hurts Garfield County's local economy. A political group that supports Colorado's oil and gas industry says it's withdrawing 2 ballot initiatives that would have tried to block new energy regulations. KDNK's Capitol reporter Scott Franz has the story.
The announcement came shortly after Governor Jared Polis said he is urging state lawmakers to avoid pursuing any new energy regulations next year. Polis is calling for a 2-year truce between conservation groups and energy companies. He says a law passed last year giving local governments more regulatory power needs more time to work. He also says he will oppose any ballot measures dealing with oil and gas. Polis's actions were welcomed by Protect Colorado, a political group supporting the energy industry. In response, they say they are dropping a ballot initiative seeking to stop local governments from banning natural gas hookups. Meanwhile, Ann Lee Foster, who is leading an effort to increase setbacks on oil and gas wells, says her environmental group will pursue a new setback initiative in 2022. I'm Scott Franz in Denver.
And finally, KDNK's Luke Nessler, host of Express Yourself, had a socially distanced interview with outgoing Carbondale Police Chief Gene Schilling over Mountain Fair weekend. Here's a clip from the conversation.
It's kind of a bittersweet mountain fair for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, it's not the normal mountain fair. I was hoping that with the new chief coming in, he'd be able to experience that with me being part of it. But at least we're having some type of mountain fair, and we enjoy it every year. But the other half of it is, I always tell everybody, my favorite thing about mountain fair is the Monday after, because we've made it through another mountain fair without a lot of issues.
Were there some times where you wondered if you would make it through, where some of the issues were just overwhelming?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
You know,
Tell me.
Years ago, and who knows how many years ago, probably 10 or maybe more, you know, when we had open containers in the streets and we had people that were very inebriated in the street, and we had a lot of fights in town, and we responded from party to party to party. And one particular time, we had some guys that got involved in a knife fight on Main Street. And when the officers tried to respond to break things up, the crowd just engulfed them, and it was real hard for the officers to get in there and calm things down and get people taken care of. At that point in time, we still tried to work it ourselves with only officers from Carbondale, and everybody worked. But after that year, we started bringing in officers from other jurisdictions to help us, and we traded for like Strawberry Days, Garfield County Fair, Silt Hay Days, Burning Mountain Days. And within a couple years, it got to be a lot calmer. And every year it seems to get better now, less calls, less people intoxicated, you know, less people acting out. And I hope that will continue. You know, we had bands that played in the streets. We had, you know, what's now 579 Main. And they had bands over there right next to the park and bands on Main Street. And we used to have a lot of people.
How many mountain fairs were you the police chief for?
Well, this is my 22nd year.
How about that?
Or is it more? Is it my 23rd year? I was appointed police chief in 1997, so this would have been my 23rd Mountain Fair as police chief. Well, I guess it still is, because it's technically going to be Mountain Fair.
Did you grow up in Carbondale, Gene?
Yes, I did.
So did you go to Mountain Fairs before you were police chief?
Yes, I did.
How about that? Are you one of those rare people that have been to every Mountain Fair?
I can't say that I am. I missed some before I was the police chief, but as a police chief, I've been to everyone.
How about that? That's something. One of the things that the Carbondale police are known for during Mountain Fair, of course, are tie-dye t-shirts. It's one of the first things people mention when they think about Mountain Fair. Was that your idea?
No, I can't take credit for that idea. We had officers back in the day who, Greg Knott, who is the current chief in Basalt, and Tony Kornacevich was the other officer that was here at that time. And it was basically Tony's idea more than anyone, and he convinced Greg that we should do that. And Tony and Greg actually tie-dyed the first shirts that we wore in the kitchen sink in one of their houses. And that was the first time we wore tie-dye shirts, and then we've worn them ever since. And now we get them professionally done.
I've been listening, Gene, to a lot of old recordings that KDNK made of Mountain Fair, because, of course, as you know, we broadcast the whole thing every year, Mountain Fair. And a couple of times, you've been shouted out by the bands on stage as cops wearing tie-dyes. It blows everybody away. And how inimitably Carbondale is cops in tie-dye.
Definitely it is. And, you know, the other part of it is people that attend Mountain Fair, we get so many requests for photos. People that say, my friend or my uncle or my whatever is an officer in whatever, and I don't believe that they'd ever believe cops would do this. And it's international people also. Huh. I'm from England. They'd never believe this. And we get that photo opportunity. So as far as I know, And of course, I could be wrong. We're the only law enforcement agency in the United States that does that. There may be others, but I don't know about them if there is.
I imagine there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, Gene, of a mountain fair that you engage in and your staffers too, that, you know, most people just don't think about. Is there something that jumps to mind when you think about that?
Well, there's a lot of things that over the years that come to my mind, that we do. You know, we have a trailer that we put over there, so we have somewhere for the officers to be and to be able to respond to incidents in the park and also come in and get cool and get beverages and stuff that like that. You know, the year we had the fireball go down the wires and knock the power out, we had to go down to Public Works and pick up a generator. Huh. To run some of the food booths and some of the other stuff. We didn't get the band back. And the year that the Band of Heathens was there, that the lightning bolt came and knocked, yep, the Band of Heathens off.
Yep. One of the bands that mentioned you on stage, the cops in tie-dye. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah. Go on. And then when we set up the power for the trailer, when we moved the trailer there, I had them run a new line and put a lot of power to that because there's a lot of power consumed in the mountain fair. Two or three or four years after that, whenever I had it put in, they had to start running the power from the band from where the police trailer sits, which is, you know, the beer garden and all that gets power from that, because the power they were getting from other places wasn't sufficient to run the equipment that they had. And they were very grateful they had that type of power there.
Uh-huh. I wonder if you are training your replacement, Gene, to wear tie-dye at Mountain Fair.
He's already got his tie-dye on today.
Oh, he does?
Oh, yeah. So I guess if I'm training him, yeah, but he's real into the tie-dye stuff.
Well, for the listening audience at home, you are too.
Yeah, I put mine on today, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, Gene Schilling, I know that some of our other reporting on your leaving the Carbondale Police Department, you've talked a lot about things. I don't think we have to go there, but I do want to say that from a distance, my own perceptions of you and your job, which must not have been easy, especially during Mountain Fair sometimes, but I salute you and your efforts and your community policing ethic and all the rest of it, all the great work that you've done for this community. Thank you so much, Gene Schilling.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it. And just unless things change right now, it looks like my last day will be October 2nd. So I've still got couple months to try and get the new chief trained up, and hopefully he'll continue on in our tradition, and in 23 years you'll be sitting here with him talking to him about all of his memories and have those same comments to him, and that's my hope.
Well, that sounds really great. Gene Schilling, thank you so much for joining us here on KDNK.
You're welcome.
You can hear the whole interview at KDNK.org. That's it for this week's newsreel, and that's a wrap for the weekly newsreel. We're taking a hiatus for a little while, but hope to be back soon. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.